Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet, online and on KBIA. I'm Reuben Stern. Communities across the nation are still struggling to figure out how they might return to prosperity when, or if, America's Great Recession ever truly lets up. From the president on down to the cable news commentators, many have argued that the road to recovery will follow a different economic path from the one that got us where we are. One notion, championed by author Richard Florida, suggests that creative, talented minds will be the drivers of the economic development in the coming years. The presence of what he calls talent clusters could largely determine which cities flourish and which might fail. But what does artistic thinking have to do with a thriving economy? If there is a connection, how does a city nurture and attract the kind of creative talent that makes a difference? And how does Columbia stack up? Our guests today are going to help explain the connection between creative talent and the economy of the future. First with us, Kelsey Meyer is the Senior Vice President of Digital Talent Agents in Columbia. She's also involved with the League of Innovators, a group that works to connect the Mid-Missouri entrepreneurs. Welcome to the program, Kelsey Meyer.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you with us today. Also with us in the studio today is Chris Stevens. He was recently appointed manager of the City of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs. Prior to that, he worked for 12 years at Boone County National Bank. Welcome to the program, Chris Stevens.
Great to be here.
Glad to have you with us as well. Also with us today on the phone, we have Stephen Pedigo. He is the Director of Research for the Creative Class Group. His consulting firm was founded by author Richard Florida. Among other things, the group advises communities nationwide on how to attract a creative class of workers. Welcome to our program, Stephen Pedigo.
Happy to be here.
Glad to have you with us as well from Boston. We also hope that our audience will be part of the conversation as well. Are you someone whose work involves a lot of creativity, artistic or otherwise? If so, we'd love to hear about it. Tell us what you do. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And I just want to remind everyone that the program takes place from 2 to 3 every Monday, so that's the time to call in. And I'm going to start with this question, Stephen Pedigo. What does it mean for a city to have a creative class? What does that mean?
So we like to define the creative class as sort of, it really is a group of folks that, you know, Peter Drucker in the 1950s called the knowledge workers. But we think of the creative class not only as sort of knowledge workers, but those of folks working in creativity, in the arts, in design. It's folks that make up about, what we think, about 30% of the workforce world across the country. They account for about 50% of wages. And if you think about the creative class in terms of not only sort of producers of goods and services, are also sort of a consumer of goods and services as well. They consume about 70% of discretionary income, actually.
Okay. And what's the importance of that? Why does it matter to have those kinds of people in the community?
You know, we really believe they're sort of the driving force of the economy. As, you know, as we've looked at the economy, as it has shifted sort of from an industrial-based economy, where places like Pittsburgh and Detroit were sort of the true leaders in the economic place. Now we've moved to sort of this creative economy or this knowledge economy where knowledge and creativity really matter. And so the creative class are really the folks that are driving that. It's sort of the thinkers, the entrepreneurs, the folks who are really, in a sense, creating the new products and services that we consume. We believe to think that they're really the driving force.
Right. Now, Kelsey, you're dealing with a lot of people who are on the ground in terms of trying to create new businesses, create the economy here in Columbia. How does that fit with what you're seeing?
It definitely fits very well. Something that he said when he said that, you know, it's these entrepreneurs. I deal with a lot of entrepreneurs in the League of Innovators, and a lot of these people, you know, are looking for other people that are in this creative class, and they're looking on where to meet those people and how to interact with them and how to really get things started. And so that's something that we're trying to really help with, is get those people connected. But there's definitely a lot more that can be done and a lot more that these entrepreneurs kind of need in the community in order to take advantage of the other people in the creative class.
Well, let's talk about that. What What is it that they need? I mean, why can't any one of them succeed if there aren't a bunch of them?
Because if they don't know that each other are out there and if they can't connect, then they look other places for those resources. So, you know, up until a couple of years ago, people might have thought that Columbia wouldn't be the best place to start a business because they think there's not enough people from that creative class here. So maybe they don't have the web developers they need or the graphic designers. And so they start looking to places like St. Louis and Kansas City, thinking that that's where they need to go to find people to help with their ideas. And having those people in the same area cuts down on cost, it cuts down on having to travel, and ultimately keeps those people in Columbia instead of moving to the bigger cities.
And Chris Stevens, maybe you can help us understand how much of this is there in Columbia?
Well, I think, you know, one of the obstacles is, you know, one other thing they need is access to capital a lot of times. And we are still sort of a production-based community here. And I've always talked about the good old boy network still sort of runs Columbia. And for them, they're used to a very production-based society where they're used to you producing something. Well, a lot of these new young entrepreneurs are creating a lot of internet-based technologies where they're not maybe producing a thing. There's no warehouse of these things. And so a lot of times they don't quite understand these new innovative businesses that these entrepreneurs are trying to start. And so sometimes access to capital from banks can be difficult, and getting people to just the community buy in your idea can be very difficult sometimes too.
Okay. I want to remind our audience really quickly, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the role of creative people in driving the economy of the future. Joining me in the studio are Kelsey Meyer, Senior Vice President at Digital Talent Agents, and Chris Stevens, who is the manager of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs. On the phone, we have Stephen Pedigo, Director of Research for the Creative Class Group, a consulting firm that advises communities nationwide. For those of you in our audience, are you one of the people in the so-called creative class, whose primary occupation may be coming up with new ideas in the arts or the sciences or technology or some other field? If so, tell us about what you do. We'd love to hear it. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Or if you want to call in with questions for our panelists, you can do that too. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can go onto our website and chat with others in the audience. Just go to kbia.org, scroll down to the link for Intersection. Stephen Pedigo, how does what you just heard from our two studio guests compare with the other communities that you work with across the country?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that becomes very clear to us as we go from city to city is that a lot of what the creative class are looking for is the same in their community. So, you know, we call sort of our ecosystem an index of what folks in the creative class are looking for, the four P's. And we like to say that for the creative class to be successful in any community, may it be Columbia, Boise, Penn State College, Austin, Nashville, whatever the city is, we like to say that there are going to be sort of four key attributes in a community. So there's got to be this access to a technological or technology sort of ecosystem. So a lot of it speaks to this importance of access to capital, as one of the panels was discussing earlier in terms of the importance of that. There's got to be access to other talented people. Like, we know that the creative class depend on folks to bounce ideas off of, to work with, to collaborate with. So having a thick sort of labor force of other creative workers that they can interact with is really important and connect with. The third thing is that we know that the creative class is looking for an environment in a community that's open, that's inclusive. We like to say that it's a tolerant community. And then finally, the piece that we haven't talked a lot about yet is this idea of quality of place or territory assets, meaning that, you know, the creative class are looking for places that are thick with amenities, that provides a great quality of life, a great quality of place. So, you know, when you think about Columbia's assets and you sort of catalog them, those are sort of the four key attributes of the creative class that's looking for in their community.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. Karen wants to talk about your work. Karen, are you with us? Great. Thank you for joining the program and for calling in. Karen, what sort of work do you do?
I'm a licensed massage therapist and personal trainer.
Okay. And in terms of the things about community here in Columbia that you find supportive of your work, what would you say supports the kind of work that you do?
Well, what Stephen was just describing, other people to bounce ideas off of, I have a friend who's a yoga instructor. She's a really key player in my life. I attend the Tai Chi classes at the Armory that is open to the community, that keeps me physically and mentally fit. There are a lot of therapists in this community, too. I enjoy my work because I'm applying science. It feels like creative work to draw from anatomy and physiology and try to strategize with my client about how to address whatever issues they bring to the table or to the exercise.
Okay. Karen, is there anything else about your work you'd like to share with us today in terms of being a creative person in Columbia?
I do feel very supported in this community, and I do experience the tolerance. I've lived in this community for the better part of 38 years. I moved away for a few years, and there are creative people. It seemed I had to really reach further and dig harder to find them wherever I was, but this community seems to support that kind of activity and draw it forth and welcome it and be tolerant of it.
Okay, well, Karen, thank you very much for calling in today and for joining the program. We appreciate your being part of the conversation here.
Thank you.
Chris, you know, Karen talked about applying science in her work as a therapist. What are the other kinds of creativity that exists in our community here? That's one type, and obviously there's a whole range here, right?
Well, yeah, and you know, we're fortunate to be in a town with three colleges. And even if you look at some of the growth at the University of Missouri in the bioscience areas, a lot of those scientists are doing more than just measuring in their beakers. I mean, they have to be very creative thinkers when it comes to their science. So it's more than just your traditional painters, sculptors, musicians, things like that. A lot of your other maybe more science-driven types of positions do have to have creativity in their job.
Right. And is that consistent with what you see, Kelsey?
Absolutely. I think that a lot of times people don't think of a business owner or even an entrepreneur as a creative person. But when you're creating a new product or a new company, a new service, then you have to instill a lot of different types of creativity. And I think that's something that is very strong here in Columbia.
And what would you say in terms of the people that you work with mm-hmm. is the one that sets them up for success the most?
Definitely people who either know how to code, know how to develop a website, or they at least know how to speak to a web developer. We talk to so many entrepreneurs and would-be entrepreneurs who have this idea for an internet business, and their entire business relies on being able to create this website. And if they don't know how to create it themselves and they don't know how to communicate their ideas to the creative person who can create and design websites, then that's a huge barrier for them right there.
Right. And so it sort of gets into a different kind of needs from mm-hmm. what entrepreneurs 40, 50 years ago might have needed, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Stephen, do you want to comment on that? You know, the changing needs of people in the business world. If the creative class is going to be a driver of the economy, what needs to be there?
Well, you know, I mean, the fact that you've got, I mean, one of the things that as one of the panelists was speaking about earlier is the importance of the university. I mean, the fact that Columbia is the home to the University of Missouri is a huge benefit, and the fact that it creates that ecosystem. I mean, one of the things that we know is that entrepreneurs need the business environment to thrive in. And it's not the traditional business environment that we sometimes have thought about in the past. It was very structured. You know, the fact that the university creates this ecosystem, it creates an environment where it becomes a magnet for talent. And so there's this opportunity to form these networks and these alliances that perhaps in the past, if you were without the university or without a university in your hometown, you would struggle with a bit. So the fact that you've got a university, like the University of Missouri, in your hometown is a huge benefit, right? I mean, and you look at other communities the size of Columbia, that are without a university or without a major research institution, their creative class and entrepreneurs don't have access to an ecosystem like that is in Columbia. So it's a huge, huge advantage, particularly in this sort of knowledge-driven economy.
Right. And in your research, have you found other college towns that are particularly successful at harnessing that potential in order to get their creative class going?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, as we have started, this is the 10th anniversary of the rise of the creative class. And so Professor Florida.
The book, you mean, right?
The book, yeah, the book of the rise of the creative class. And there's a revision of the book that's coming out this May, actually. And what's very interesting is we went through and really sort of reanalyzed our creativity index and updated the new data. You know, the 10 cities that maybe were at the top last sort of when the book came out in 2001, there weren't many college towns on that list. But it's interesting that as we went back and we've updated the index, is that you've seen a significant number of college towns, like State College, and Boise, and Boulder, pop to the top, right? And they're among the leaders of the creative sector. And the real reason why is because it's because of the university. I mean, the importance that the university plays in the knowledge economy is you can't underscore the importance of that enough. You know, just from the sense of not really just the technology innovation that's coming out of university, but really speaking to everything that we've talked about in terms of the four keys, in terms of access to talent, access to this sort of open environment where networking can happen and collaboration can unfold, as well as amenities and quality of place. It becomes these are communities like Columbia that become really great places to live because of the size of the scale and the amenities that they provide that they wouldn't otherwise without a university in the presence.
Yeah, and I would say the University of Missouri in particular has made some great strides over the last 10 years because I think for a while a lot of the innovation was coming out of here, but then it was picked up and it was taken somewhere else, whether it was Michigan, California, Texas. And so the university has taken some great strides to try and keep that innovation here. A good example is the business incubator that's over there on Reactor Field. And again, that's meant for these entrepreneurs to kind of have a place to call home, have that support system that we're hearing a lot about, and then hopefully when the business grows out, they'll keep it here in Columbia and create these very high-tech and hopefully high-paying positions as well. So I think university has made some great strides over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And also the university just recently this year started the Entrepreneurship Alliance, which is now a program that goes across all the schools at the university to encourage students to get involved in entrepreneurship. And I know that when I attended, our classes taught us more as entrepreneurship as a very risky, career path. And now they're having more entrepreneur classes and actually installing an entrepreneurship minor so that students have the opportunity to get more real world experience and really encourage that in the students.
Okay, I want to remind our audience once more. Sorry, Stephen, I'm going to come back to you in just one second. First, let me let everyone know this is Intersection, a program of KBIA, the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about the role of creative people in driving the economy of the future. Joining me in the studio are Kelsey Meyer, Senior Vice President at Digital Talent Agents, and Chris Stevens, Manager of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs. On the phone, we have Stephen Pettigo, Director of Research for the Creative Class Consulting Firm. For those of you in our audience, how much creativity do you think there is in Columbia? Share your thoughts. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Stephen, you were wanting to get in there.
Yeah, I just was going to say that it's about keeping their talent and keeping your and creating an environment that's sticky, right? I mean, it's one thing to have a university in your town. I mean, a university that sort of creates that environment. But more importantly, it's about having an active university. And all of the initiatives that were sort of described before previously is about really just trying to make your environment become sticky, right? That is to say that if you can keep your entrepreneurs in your community without having them go to another place or another city, or if you can keep your talent at home, it allows your community to sort of reap the economic benefits of that. So, you know, the importance of a university is one thing, but the importance of an active university that creates that sticky ecosystem is even more important.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I want to relate that back to the community as well, because in addition to the university taking some strides, the community has sort of come on board too. And I don't know how long ago, but about 10 years ago, formed the Centennial Investors. It was a group of angel investors, and their main point was to try and keep some of this great innovation and grow, you know, high-tech, high-educated industries here in Columbia. And so they have made some investments in a few different startup entrepreneurial businesses that have done well. Newsy.com is a great example of one of their early investments that has done very well here in our Columbia community and has kept growing.
Right. Stephen, I wanted to just ask you mentioned three particular college towns, State College, Boise, and Boulder. And I just wonder, are there things in particular that you saw in your research that are going on in those towns that are part of the reason they're having those successes?
Well, I mean, it's doing everything that that was described earlier, right? I mean, it's about creating the support system and the ecosystem there.
But I mean, what are the universities doing specifically that are that are causing those results?
I mean, one of the things that Penn State particularly has done in State College is they've done a better job of creating an environment where not only is science and research and technology coming out of the university, but it's also they're helping the entrepreneurs, the faculty, the students actually think about how to commercialize that technology that's coming out of the university. And it's the same thing in Boulder and Boise, right? I mean, there has been deliberate efforts to really help them think about how do you create the business plan? How do you create the growth plan that actually can turn this sort of basic science or basic technology into a real commercial product? And then the other thing is that they're keeping their folks at home. So rather than picking up and moving, perhaps their business to Silicon Valley or to Philadelphia if it's in Pennsylvania, they're actually staying in State College. And why? Because they like the quality of life of their community. There's something to be said about the scale of a university town, right? A university town gives you terrific access to amenities and culture, but it also is the perfect size that's manageable. And I think that what we know from a lot of creative workers is they want access to amenities, but they want it to be manageable, right? They want to be able to have a sort of a balance between both work and life. And in a lot of college towns, particularly, places like State College and Boulder and Boise, have provided that and really sort of marketed that to the students who are in those communities. And a lot of students don't want to leave. I mean, I think that's what made Austin, Texas so successful in the last decade, is that it was a university that obviously was doing technology really well, but the city of Austin became such a great place in terms of lifestyle and amenities that many of the students at the University of Texas just didn't want to leave. And so it became these real thick talent pools of technology workers, folks in biosciences, cultural arts and design, and the community has really benefited from that.
Right.
So it's not just about creating that ecosystem that can support basic science and help the entrepreneurs commercialize products, but it's also that quality of life that becomes it. It's just as important, we believe.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about the quality of life stuff. Kelsey, what is it that makes a graduating college senior want to stay in Columbia, and what are the things that make them not want to stay in Columbia?
I think one of the things that makes them want to stay in Columbia is identifying these opportunities. I'm a good example of someone who did stay here, and early on my senior year, I had no intention to stay in Columbia, because one of the reasons that people don't want to stay is because they almost view this, if you go to Mizzou, sometimes you can view it as just a college town, and you think that when you graduate, there's nothing else out there. And now that I've been here for, 10 months after graduating, I realize that there's so much more to this town. And one thing that made me want to stay was that I started an internship with a company during my senior year that I really grew to love and really grew to be passionate about. So once I realized that I wanted to work for that company, I couldn't see any reason to leave. So I think that having students know what opportunities are out there before they graduate will definitely help a lot.
Right. And what's the flip side? I mean, you have a lot of cohorts that mm-hmm. got the heck out of here as soon as they were done. I mean, what's making them leave?
I think they view it as if they're going to move on to the next part of their life, maybe they think they need to be in a different space. I have a lot of friends who are very jealous that I'm still in Columbia. So I think it's just a mindset that people are in that something needs to change to be able to showcase Columbia as more than just a college town to these students, because once they're out, they can recognize it, but not when they're in the school.
Right. Chris Stevens, your thoughts on the quality of life aspects that either make or break Columbia as a destination for these creative types?
Well, I think it's very important. One of the things I heard from some big economic guru is that quality of life doesn't always attract people to move to a city. They move there because of a particular position or access to health care or affordable housing, something like that. But it is that quality of life that keeps them there. So it is
right.
The arts, the culture, the good restaurants, the access to good music, and that's what keeps people here. And that has grown a lot in Columbia. And hopefully, like Kelsey said, we can keep some of those new young entrepreneurs, good forward thinkers here because we have all the other quality of life that they might be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, are there other quality of life attributes that we haven't talked about yet?
No, I mean, I think that both the panelists are right. I mean, it's about – one of the things that we say when folks ask us, well, what do you need in your community? What's the right sort of mix of amenities to keep someone in the community? And what we like to say is that, it's really about the stage of life that a lot of people are at. For instance, a young creative worker coming out of college may be looking for different amenities than sort of a young 31, 32-year-old folks who maybe is just starting a family. And so what we'd like to say is that a community has to appeal to a multiple level of folks and provide sort of different types of amenities for different types of people in terms of the phase of where they are in their life. And so a lot of the communities that have been successful have been able to create that quality of life that's appealing among sort of different phases of life. But back to Kelsey's point, I mean, her example of working with her employer and really getting invested in the community is a really great antidote, and it's one that we point to a lot of times. I mean, we're working with the University of Texas at Arlington right now on a very interesting project about the role that their university can play in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. And one of the things that we've told the president is that if you really want to keep your university students in the community, you want them to not leave the Metroplex, or you want them to be in Dallas or Fort Worth, get them involved in their community while they're a student. And maybe that's through volunteering, that could be through internships, but it gets back to this idea of making people sticky in a community.
Right.
And if you can become invested in a community while you're there, and you can create those opportunities to really showcase why this is a great place to live, or why it's a great place to work, or to start your career, depending on what's important to that person coming out of school, that's how you keep people in your community, is you get them involved, you keep them sticky while you have them. So you don't find yourself on sort of the losing end of the brain drain as opposed to sort of that brain gain.
Right. We have a comment from Jake in our chat room who says, one problem keeping people here after college is the lack of, quote, young professional atmosphere. Other cities do a good job of creating young professional groups and hangouts. Kelsey, would you agree with that?
Yes and no. I mean, there's a really good EPIC, it's Emerging Professionals in Columbia, that's, I think, maybe related with the Chamber, I'm not exactly sure, but I think that there are groups like that. It's a little bit harder to find them. I think that maybe as a college student, you don't know that those are out there. I know that once I graduated, I thought, oh, I can't go to the same restaurants and same bars to hang out because those are all the college places, and you almost recognize different places that you didn't realize before, and I think that maybe everything's just not readily available enough for people that are still in college to recognize it, but those groups are there.
Right. And do you have ideas for how that might change?
I think that what he said about getting involved in the community is huge, because that's definitely what made me want to stay, was that I really started to care about the entrepreneurial environment in Columbia, and that's made me want to continue to stay, and I can't think about leaving now because I want to see it, you know, flourish.
Right.
So I think that, you know, internships, volunteering, everything he said, just getting students to recognize the community outside of their college to kind of get them out of their bubble.
And whose job should that be?
It should be the communities and the universities. I think that it will benefit both of them, so it should be something that there needs to be initiatives taken to really connect the community with the campus more.
Okay. I'm going to remind our audience one more time. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the role of creative people in driving the economy of the future. Joining me in the studio are Kelsey Meyer, who is Senior Vice President at Digital Talent Agents. We also have Chris Stevens, manager of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs. On the phone, we have Stephen Pedigo, who is the director of research for the Creative Class Group, a consulting firm that advises communities nationwide. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. In the meantime, you can join our conversation after the break by giving us a call. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. We'd love to hear about your creative work in the community and what you find helpful in being a creative person at work here in Columbia and Mid-Missouri. So stick around, join the rest of the conversation. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the role of creative people in driving the economy of the future. Joining me in the studio are Kelsey Meyer, Senior Vice President at Digital Talent Agents, and Chris Stevens, Manager of the City of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs. On the phone, we also have Stephen Pedigo, who is the Director of Research for the Creative Class Group, a consulting firm that advises communities nationwide. For those of you in our audience, what would you like to see happen to make Columbia and Mid-Missouri more welcoming to people with creative talent? Share your thoughts. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And Chris Stevens, I'm going to start with you on that question, basically. Attracting creative people to Columbia, what is being done to do that?
Well, I think overall we do have a pretty strong creative community, especially if you look at our arts community. Sculptors, painters, musicians, things like that. But one of the things that has, if you look at areas that have been truly successful in attracting artists, a lot of times they have taken some very blighted areas and allowed artists to move in, take over these properties for really little to no money, and created a community right there where the artists have then come on and take over. Paducah, Kentucky is one of my favorite examples, that artists were buying properties for pennies on the dollar, fixing these homes up. More artists saw that, and it became, you know, it snowballed, and all of a sudden you had this huge community of artists that now all of a sudden became a tourist draw for people from all over the country. And so although we have not had any really direct efforts like that, I mean, we've got some artists here, but we don't really have a part of town that we need to turn around because it's so blighted and we need somebody to fill some of these empty homes. So there has been some efforts up in the North Village a little bit, but one of the things they have found is that artists like to own the properties, because what's happened in some other communities, they will come in and rent in some of these blighted areas, and then what happens is the restaurants follow, the shops follow, and all of a sudden the property values go up and the artists wind up getting squeezed out of the area that they helped rise from the ashes. And so, like in the North Village, when they tried to do it, there wasn't a lot of properties for these artists to buy, and so they weren't super successful in terms of attracting them.
Right. Stephen, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about those kinds of examples of, you know, Chris mentioned Paducah, where it was a blighted neighborhood that led to a lot of cheap space, basically, that brought people in. There's talk of a lot of other places where innovation has taken place because there were neighborhoods that were ripe for people to sort of occupy in a very inexpensive way. How important is that, sort of that inexpensive place to land, as opposed to some of these other factors we've talked about?
Yeah, I mean, so when you start to think about sort of successful examples of where art has really been the core, the driver of neighborhood revitalization, there are several success stories. I mean, Paducah, Kentucky is a terrific example of that. Of a smaller community on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood scale where you've actually seen change. And you can even look to say, you can even look at even larger communities. For instance, Portland, Oregon is a terrific example of that in the Pearl District. It's an old neighborhood that I used to live in, for instance, that was old abandoned warehouses. It became really popular among sort of artists and bohemians, and really you saw art sort of lead the regentrification of a neighborhood that was really blighted and that needed a lot of TLC. Another great example of that is in Philadelphia with City Center, or even in Washington, D.C. along the U Street corridor, et cetera. But the challenge a lot of times with those communities is as areas become really popular, obviously they become much more expensive, and so sometimes you see folks being pushed out. So, for instance, in Portland, for instance, or even in Washington, D.C., you're seeing the artists who sort of really led this sort of revitalization being pushed out to the other edges or to other parts of the city. And that becomes the challenge, right? I mean, the place becomes very popular. You've got folks that get pushed out, and so there has to be mechanisms in place that allow for these artists, these creative workers, these folks who were really sort of the urban pioneers and really transformed these neighborhoods to sort of remain in these communities. You know, one of our favorite Jane Jacobs quotes is that she's talking about the idea of neighborhoods being revitalized, and she says even when the rich people move in and a place becomes boring, even the rich people want to leave it. And that sort of speaks to this whole idea that as you create neighborhoods or communities or places for uh, the, uh, of of great quality of life in places that are thick with amenities, you have to think about how you can make them accessible to a lot of folks. Because, you know, to the basis of your first question is that the price becomes really, really important and can become a player.
Right. Kelsey, your thoughts on that in terms of access to space for entrepreneurs and low-cost space and things like that?
It's definitely something that's very important. A lot of entrepreneurs will start working out of their home or just work in coffee shops, and that's one thing that with the League of Innovators over at the Museo building, they're trying to give an opportunity for people to have a space that they can come work out of and have co-working space. And I think that definitely the idea of co-working is something that's working really well in a lot of larger cities, and that if people in Colombia can be more comfortable with that and it can start happening more, then it not only helps deal with cheaper space, but it also helps with people collaborating and interacting as well.
Right. Now, is that what the League of Innovators is all about, is providing low-cost space, or are there other things?
There's kind of two sides to it. So the one side is co-working space, so low-cost space. The other side is the idea of networking. So the League of Innovators, when you have a membership, you can come and use the space and use it as your office and meet with, you know, employees there, meet with partners there, but you can also come to all of the events. So we normally have an event every week or every other week, about 2 to 3 events a month, where it's either a very large event where people can come and listen to a national speaker, Skype in with us, or a small event where people can just come by for lunch and get to know other entrepreneurs. So really the two sides of the League of Innovators are co-working and networking.
Mm-hmm. And how effective has that been?
I think that it's been effective for the people who are very highly involved, and there's some people who are members who aren't taking full advantage of it. I think it's definitely something that we need to refine and really learn more of what is needed in Colombia. But for the people that I've seen really take full advantage of using the space and using all the networking opportunities, we've seen some really great things come out of it. One of the main things that we've done with the League of Innovators is we hosted a startup weekend here in September, and the winning team is actually still continuing on with their business, and I know that at least one of the people has quit their full-time jobs to work on their company full-time. So just having one weekend event that had a company come out of it is really exciting.
Right.
Well, I think that's a great example of how the tide is turning here in Colombia a little bit, where you have something like the League of Innovators, you have more forward-thinking people more accepting of these businesses that are not necessarily just bricks and mortar anymore. And we're seeing a lot more of that in Colombia, and hopefully that tide is turning a little bit.
Right. And are the funders getting that? I mean, you mentioned very early in the program, you know, that there's a mindset of people who have money to invest that, wait, I'm supposed to be buying a store that I can walk into. Is the tide changing on that, or is there still that kind of hiccup?
You know, coming from 13 years of banking, I think I can say that from a banking standpoint, in this particular town, we're still a little uncomfortable with it. You know, they're so used to it being a development type opportunity with bricks and mortar, real estate tied to it. So when it's an idea, when there's nothing that you can hold in your hand, I think the financiers still struggle with that a little bit. I think they're more open to it because they have seen some successes. Talked a little bit about Newsy.com, VA Mortgage, and all internet-based business that's, you know, now one of our larger employers in Colombia. They're starting to see these successes and maybe willing to take a little bit more chance.
Right. And I think
really, if you think about it, it really doesn't make sense, because if you look at Colombia's economy, particularly if you look at its workforce, it's a knowledge-driven economy, right? It's not a bricks-and-mortar economy. And I just during the break, was looking at the workforce of Colombia. You know, 34% of the workers in Colombia make up what we call the creative class. 17% of that is just of the workforce is just in this sort of industrial type sector, you know, what we would call the working sector. But really, if you think about it, Colombia is a knowledge sector economy. And so, you know, if you're thinking about an economic development plan that's really going to support the growth of the community, it's about creating, you know, the networks, the support systems, the finance systems that drive knowledge and creativity, because, you know, that's the majority of Colombia's, economy. It's a knowledge economy. It's not an economy of bricks and mortar anymore.
Right. Well, based on that, Steve, you know, you've heard a lot of what is going on in Colombia. What would you say needs to happen here from your vantage point?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, so that's a great question. I mean, I'm not here to sort of provide consulting advice on the fly, but I mean,
of course,
if I was telling you from knowing that Columbia is the home to a major research institution, the first thing I would start with is to look at the University of Missouri as an anchor institution. And that would be to say, look to see not only what's happening in terms of research and development that's coming out of the university, but how can a university help support the small business ecosystem that's there in the community, you know, from both a supplier side as well, perhaps from training, perhaps from buying goods and services from the local environment, really helping to help think about how you can flourish the local business environment there. I mean, that would be the first place I would start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I think the points that folks have been making earlier about the idea of looking to say what's happening in terms of helping creative workers connect with each other. Are the systems that are in place or the organizations in place, are they really effective? And if they're not effective, how do you make them more effective? How do you get more people involved and create a critical mass around that? The third thing I would say is that going back to what we talked about earlier is you've got such a large number of folks. And, you know, a lot of times we talk about education as of what we call local goods and services. And typically you don't think about that being a sector that you would grow your economy on. But for Columbia, Cumberly becomes a place where you're importing lots of talent and exporting talent. It becomes a real key driver of your economy. And so the question I would push to the local business environment, maybe the university community leaders, is how can you get folks more involved and how can you leverage the access to the university to grow not only the local your local business systems, but also attract and keep that talent and folks in the community?
Right. And Kelsey, what's your sense of how much of that there's an appetite for already in Columbia? I mean, how much is already going on and how much convincing needs to be done to do what Stephen just described?
I think that there's definitely an appetite for it. It seems I have kind of a skewed view because I moved to Columbia 5 years ago. And a lot of people that I've talked to have said, you know, just within the last 4 and 5 years, things started to change. So I don't know really how everything was before. But I think that just seeing with the League of Innovators, with groups like Como Rich Web and with Ready, with all of these different things going on, there's definitely an appetite for it. And it almost seems like there needs to be more of connecting all of these different resources, because right now people really seem to be separate. And that if there is one thing that's connecting these and sharing all of the ideas together, then that might be able to benefit the whole community better.
Right. Chris Stevens, you're nodding your head.
I think she's absolutely right. I mean, we need to find a way to bring everybody together. We have had some great successes over the last 5 years, but how do we bring everybody together to continue to grow those opportunities?
Right. And I guess another thing, you know, you mentioned the funding stuff, and I want to come back to that a little bit and get Stephen's opinion on this. Stephen, I think the word is squelchers, right? The people in the community who still have a vision of the economy being a different way from where it may be emerging and might stand in the way of the progress. Do I have the word right? Squelchers, is that it?
Yeah, I mean, those are folks who sort of dampen that are the folks that are sort of dampening, who are maybe thinking that this whole idea of creativity and innovation and the way the economy is moving is perhaps BS and maybe kumbayanas, you know. I mean, the fact is that to Kelsey's point and to the other panelists' point, I mean, the key here is about connectivity and it's about connection. In terms of getting folks and really understanding what are the assets that are available. I mean, for so long, communities thought that they could grow their economy focusing on you can build a commercial, you know, build real estate, you can build it and it will come. And what we really know now, given the Great Recession, or as we like to call it, the reset of the economy, that it's really about assets and it's about marketing and really connecting the dots on the assets that you have. And the fact that you've got a major research institution, you've got these entrepreneurial groups, you've got a really active business community. How do you connect all of the dots and really market the assets that you have and know the strengths that you are, right? So that is to say, know the community and know what makes up your economy, because that's what's going to drive your economic prosperity forward. It's not trying to mimic what one community has done or what another community is doing. It's about being authentic to the assets that you have and really leveraging those competitive advantages to grow your economy. And so understanding what you have. I mean, as basic as that sounds, there's so many communities across the country who don't even understand or don't have a sense of what they have in their community and how they can leverage those assets to grow their economy. So that's just the first starting point, and one that a lot of communities across the country haven't done very successfully.
Okay. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the role of creative people in driving the economy of the future. Joining me in the studio are Kelsey Meyer, Senior Vice President at Digital Talent Agents in Columbia, and Chris Stevens, Manager of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs. On the phone we have Stephen Pedigo, Director of Research for the Creative Class Group, a consulting firm. He is based in Boston. For those of you in the audience, what do you think might be done to encourage more entrepreneurship, more creativity, and more MU students to settle in Columbia? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. We'd love to hear your thoughts about that or anything else that we've talked about today. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. In terms of this question of connecting the resources and identifying the strengths of the unique community in mid-Missouri, where do you think that ought to come from, Kelsey? The city? The community? Business leaders? Where should that start?
Really, with the community, I think one great thing that has started just recently is there's a website now called startupcomo.com, which they're trying to do exactly that. They're trying to connect all of the resources that we have. So I think it was last Friday, there was two Fridays ago, an event sponsored by Ready, that was the Entrepreneurial Summit, and they spoke about this exact problem of all these different assets that we have and how to connect them. So now if you go to Startup Como, you can see a list of everything that we have and basically a calendar and a discussion board of trying to connect people from all of these. So that was actually started by a local community member and entrepreneur, Brant Bukowski, and he's just, you know, kind of taken charge of trying to make something happen. I think a lot of other people need to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, do you have examples of other communities that did this successfully and what they did to make it work?
Yeah, I mean, we just did some really interesting work in Dayton, Ohio. And Dayton, Ohio is an interesting community. It's a Midwestern community that sort of has struggled with the change of the economy. It was obviously a very industrial-driven economy and is now trying to morph into a creative economy and really trying to leverage the assets that it has in terms of an Air Force base, et cetera. But there was a group of folks that got together. They called themselves Community Catalyst, and they came together for sort of a couple days to work on some four initiatives. And one of the initiatives that they worked on was about cataloging the assets they have and bringing folks together, the initiative called Update. And so they brought particularly folks under 40, very similar to what Syracuse had done with its below 40 summit. And it was really about creating an environment and an opportunity. It was just a sort of a two-day event for the first time it happened 2 years ago, in terms of getting folks just in the same room to start to meet each other and just to rub elbows in a very informal way. And they really have seen some great successes out of this in terms of connecting folks who would normally not connect with each other. Business leaders, maybe it's college students in the community, maybe it's community leaders, church leaders. And so it was a really great mixing of folks and sort of a mosaic. And they've seen terrific successes from this. Another community that I point to is Louisville, Kentucky, has created a really interesting digital platform. It's called Kix.com, K-I-X.com. And it's a digital platform that they've community almost similar sort of to like a Facebook for their own local community, I guess you could say. And it's been a really interesting sort of digital approach of helping folks connect to resources that they have. And I think that you can say, if you look at and talk to folks in this community, particularly folks that were looking for work during the downturn of the economy and to being able to connect with new folks locally, they've seen some terrific successes of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Chris and Kelsey, do you see opportunities for things that could be done that would help address the problem?
Well, I think more ways to find to get people connected. Certainly, I'll give a pat on the back to League of Innovators and what they're trying to do in terms of giving these entrepreneurs a place to call home, letting them share ideas with other young entrepreneurs and let them know that they're not alone in what they're trying to do. So I think more opportunities to get people connected and certainly access to funding. You know, a lot of these people have great ideas, but it's how do you take it to the next step? And sometimes that takes money. So we need access to the funds.
Yeah, just to touch on access to funding as well, it seems like a lot of the entrepreneurs that we deal with in League of Innovators, they aren't necessarily ready for Centennial Investors. They're not ready for VC funding or even angel funding, but they just need that initial seed. They just need, you know, maybe $5,000 to $10,000 to get started. And if they're not getting it from the bank loans, then there needs to be another source that they can do. So something that can provide people with seed funding for the beginning of their entrepreneurial ventures would be really important.
Right.
Terrific example of that I just want to point to.
Thanks.
It's a great organization that I would encourage everyone to check out, and it's in Pittsburgh, and it's called the Sprout Fund. The Sprout Fund is an organization that not only sort of funds entrepreneurs and small, particularly with maybe potential interesting community-based ideas, but they also do a lot of funding for community nonprofits, et cetera. And it's sort of this whole idea of using this entrepreneurial startup environment to help sort of create solutions to some of the community's issues. But the Sprout Fund, in terms of its model of giving small grants, $500, $1,000, $1,500 or so, or even $2,000, to get these ideas, to get these initial business plans, initiatives up front, is one that I would point to as a true success story. I mean, and there's some great stories that organizations, nonprofit entities, small social entrepreneur enterprise organizations that have born out of the Sprout Fund as great success, and the impact that it's had on Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh's economy is Pittsburgh has tried to reinvent itself and really reinvent itself from the community up, right? I mean, how do you leverage not only just sort of the businesses and these large institutions that we've talked about today, but how do you leverage the community at the community base, at the ground, the grassroots level, the artists, the bohemians, et cetera, maybe the entrepreneur, those entry-level entrepreneurs, sort of starting entrepreneurs in a community. How do you leverage the talent at the community base? And the Sprout Fund's been a great example of that.
Just a real quick thing, Steve. Where does the money come from for the Sprout Fund?
They're funded through a lot. They work as they get a lot of their funding, obviously, from corporate sponsorships. They get a lot of their funding from large foundations, universities in town as well. So it's sort of a mix of funding, and they have a board of I think it's 12 to 15 folks who work as sort of is in a grantee board. They look at the grants that come in, and they're really quick grants, right? And the thing that makes the Sprout Fund really successful is that it's accessible, meaning that their granting committee meets very often, and it's a quick, easy process to get the funding. So there's not this long sort of foundation cycle or long application cycle. It's fairly quick. The barriers to entry, this idea of this whole the social capital barriers are really low, and so people can test these ideas in their community. And they really use Pittsburgh as this great sort of testing ground, as this laboratory for these ideas. And it's had some amazing success.
Right. I want to follow up on one thing that Stephen said. You know, he brought up the phrase bohemian, young bohemian thing. We've been talking about two sort of tracks of creative people, the creative artist community who are, you know, creating art as an expressive medium and that. And then we've been talking about the sort of business entrepreneurship type of creativity. What's the connection here? How do those two things fit together? Do they fit together here in Columbia? Do they fit together elsewhere? Chris Stevens, we'll start with you on the Columbia question, and then maybe Stephen can help us.
That's a tough question to answer. I mean, I think they definitely do and should come together. We're making great strides to bring them together, I'm not sure we are, because certainly you've seen businesses starting to bring in artists to help their accountants think through things differently, bringing in artists to work with engineers to think of a new way to build something. So I think there should be more liaisons. There should be coordination there. I don't know that there's been a lot of efforts in Columbia in particular to try and bring those people together, but certainly I think there should be.
Right. Stephen, where do you see the connection?
They should be. I mean, there are two things. One, we would say, is that if you look at arts as just as an amenities-driven factor for your economy, you're missing out on a huge point, right? The arts can be a source of job creation. It can be a source of helping to grow your economy. But one of the things I think that it becomes really interesting is if you can co-mingle, right? So we for instance, have advised some clients in Vancouver on an incubator space. And one of the things that we thought would be a terrific idea, and it's worked for them, is to mingle not only technology and science entrepreneurs, but create an incubator space that also that is appealing and is open to artists folks that are doing design, I put them in the same space and allow them to sort of collaborate with each other. And then I think that's really the future of incubator space in this country, right? It's not just about becoming technology incubators, but it's about incubators that are integrated, and it's integrated with arts and design and technology. I think you, if you're able to create a space that is attractive to those types of folks, you're able, you can really see some significant impacts, perhaps, on technology innovation. I mean, it could be a really cool way to think about sort of the next incubator space if you're thinking about, a new incubator space in Columbia.
Right.
Well, and again, give a shout out to League of Innovators and their space, Museo. If you go over to the building, you're more likely to go see people having Nerf gun wars than you are sitting behind a computer and, trying to write out some new code.
Yeah.
And again, they've created a great creative environment where you are open to more ideas, and maybe you will commingle with somebody across the hallway and come up with something new. And it's just created a very open and creative environment.
But it does raise the question, though. I mean, why not put the League of Innovators in the North Village Arts District, right? So you put them all together in the same place and see what happens.
Yeah, that when both of you guys were talking, my mind was just spinning about ideas just for events to try to get those people to mingle, and just for opportunities for entrepreneurs to speak with the artists and bounce ideas off of them. And I think that that's definitely something that there's not enough of, that now I want to plan something for there to be something.
Chris, do you think the artists would see value in that?
I think it's a tough sell, to be honest with you. And one example is, if you look at our Chamber of Commerce, you don't see many of our arts agencies, artists belonging to the Chamber of Commerce. I think there's still that invisible wall there between, business and creativity. I would think that the artists would be certainly open to those kinds of ideas if they can come there and bring their creative brains to the table to some of these technology-driven ideas and entrepreneurs out there. I think they'd be open to it. It's a question of how do you bridge that gap, and that can be very tough.
Right. And how would you approach that? I mean, what would be the message you'd try to send out there?
Well, I think we've got to sell both sides of it. The business side of it has to realize there's a value in what the creative artists bring to the table, and vice versa. And that can be a hard sell because, again, there's that invisible wall and they seem to go in different directions when, in all reality, maybe they're not.
Right. Stephen, a quick thought, and then we're going to probably be out of time.
No, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, it's a definite tough sell sometimes. I mean, a lot of times folks on the arts side say, well, we're in communities working that they don't feel valued in their community. But, our challenge to them a lot of times is, well, how do you get more involved in the business community? I mean, as I said earlier, arts can't just be viewed as an amenity and sort of the knowledge economy. They really have to be seen as helping to drive the economy and really help push forward job creation, right? I mean, there are so many industries in the arts or tangential in the arts, culture, design, production, film, et cetera, that we know they're going to grow exorbitantly fast in the next decade in terms of job creation, particularly as the creative economy continues to grow.
Right.
And so it's about sending the point home, both to the business community as well as the art community, that there's a shared value there.
Yep. I've got to stop us there, unfortunately. Stephen, okay. We are out of time. That's all the time we have for today's Intersection. I'd like to thank our guest, Kelsey Meyer, Senior Vice President at Digital Talent Agents, Chris Stevens, Manager of Columbia's Office of Cultural Affairs, and Stephen Pedigo, Director of Research for the Creative Class Group. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast every Monday from 2 to 3. That's when we record it, so you can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org. Follow the link for Intersection. You can be a part of our conversation in our online chat room and also watch the video of the program. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Leah Becerra. Pat Akers does our audio. I'm Ruben Stern. Have a great week.